Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia. WynnBET is now live in all these states, and the excitement of Wynn Las Vegas has finally landed in online sports betting and casino play. From boosted parlays to live in-game offs on every major sport, WynnBET gives you the tools to win. Sign up today for your risk-free $1,000 sports bet. Download the WynnBET app right now or visit WynnBET.com to start winning. Hello, everybody. Wednesday, not Friday. Casual Wednesday. Joe Yurda, it's funny. I'm so used to saying casual Friday. It feels weird doing this. I can't even say as always. Well, as always, I'm joined weekly by my buddy Joe Yurda. But again, casual Wednesday. Tomorrow is Thanksgiving and Black Friday. Nobody's going to listen. So Joe and I decided let's just get this out and we'll put it out for people to consume on Wednesdays. What's going on, dude? I'll tell you what. It's good to have you on the show today because I've kind of taken a beating lately with a lot of fans because I had Sully on Tuesday, Jerry Sullivan, Joe from Queens last week. And, you know, everybody likes Joe Yurda. And not everybody likes Sully.
I don't know about
not everybody,
likes,
but... not, most people do. Not everybody likes Sully. He's not everyone's cup of tea. And certainly not Joe from Queens. But yeah, to use a wrestling term, I've gotten some heat from fans, man. They're like, why do you have these assholes on the show? And then they're not assholes. Well, Joe from Queens sort of is. But you know, anyway, back to my much likable Joe Yurda. What's going on, buddy?
You know, I like that it's casual Wednesday this week because Black Friday might be the least casual of all Fridays known to man in this country. I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe post COVID it's a little different, but I don't know, man. People lining up outside stores at like, you know, they basically get done with Thanksgiving dinner and then they're like, all right, time to go camp out Best Buy. We got to get that TV or we got to go to Walmart. Like, no way, man. I never bought into that stuff ever. Like, if I wanted a dirt cheap TV made from Singapore, then like, okay, man, I can find it on the internet someplace.
Have
like,
you ever? So you've never done Black Friday?
No.
No, me neither.
Listen, I've worked in retail a few different places in the past, and the last thing I ever want to do is be at a store when it's the worst. When you're going to get the absolute worst attitudes and worst personalities of society coming out in one moment, because like retail workers are A, pissed that they're there that early, B, tired because it was Thanksgiving the day before, C, overworked, underpaid, so like immediately everybody's just not in the greatest of moods, and then you got the people outside who are going to go crashing the gates, maybe running at stuff, definitely going to have some kind of attitude if the thing they want is, you know, snatched up by other people. Maybe you got people fighting. You definitely got people yelling
every year,
you know, arguing about shit. Like it's the worst of society. It's like it brings out all like the worst traits of everybody in society for something like that. Now some of them can be pretty orderly and like I get it. Like sometimes it's like some stores try to make it good so that, you know, they hand out tickets. They're like, okay, like we're gonna make this neat and orderly. We're not gonna have people bull rushing stuff because that's crazy. But like some of these places where they show like people like stampeding into the stores when they open up at like, you know, 4 or 5 a.m. or whatever the hell it is, and it's just like, oh my god, I can't be asked to do anything like that to get something on the cheap. Like, and it's not even like, that's the thing that gets me, like you're buying gifts and like you want to spend the least amount of money for a gift for somebody that you love. Like, okay, way to go to the basement for that one. Way to help out your mom or your dad or your brother or sister to get some cheap shit for him for Christmas. Congrats.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've never done Black Friday, and I mean, never say never, but I don't ever anticipate getting up and going shopping for Black Friday. Well, for starters, my broke ass never has any money to go get like all the really cool stuff that's out that year anyway. After Thanksgiving. So, you know, sometimes it's money. I just, yeah, man, the crowds and having to deal with the stuff. Plus nowadays you got, what is it? They have a Cyber Monday. And essentially I will say this though, Black Friday has kind of changed in the last couple of years. I've seen some Black Friday deals, like again, online that have already started, but yeah, I've always hated that concept. So you take Thanksgiving, which is one of my personal favorite holidays. Again, I love the concept of Thanksgiving in some ways, at least some things about it. I love the concept of family or close ones. And we've talked about this on the show, I know, in the past. Just having dinner and a meal and enjoying the day together. And then you have these people with Black Friday who literally will cut off dinner, or the food's not even digested in their stomach, and they're out going to wait in lines for 8 hours or for whatever store is open to go, you know, like you said, fight each other, run each other over to go get the best deals. It goes from one of my favorite things, like I said, friends, family, being together, Thanksgiving, to greed, you know, to save some money. I don't know how well, it's because of casual Friday, Black Friday. I get how this rolled right into the, I want to say something though, too. By the way, I was half joking. When it comes to Sully and Joe, I've said this on this podcast before. This is not a fan podcast. I'm not going to have people on here who I get them on there just because I know they're going to say the nicest things about the Bills or the Sabres or whatever. I have people that I think bring some value to the show, people whose takes I don't necessarily agree with, but I think they're interesting. And that's how I feel about Sully and Joe. Now, they're two different people. Jerry Sullivan, I get why. And by the way, for the record, we did not talk. I know I got asked this a lot. His Sam Reinhardt take on Monday. He had a tweet about Sam Reinhardt on Monday. If you didn't listen to the show on Tuesday or you haven't been on Twitter, he had this ridiculous take about Sam Reinhardt. I don't know, something about being the highest paid player in Florida, which is wrong.
Yeah.
He's not even the second highest paid player.
Highest paid player. He's gotten his minutes reduced. He hasn't got a point in 6 days. That to me, trolling masterclass of just like baiting the hook and saying like, all right, who's gonna bite? And Sabres Twitter hard.
Agreed. Absolutely. And I did not ask him about that tweet. I didn't want to go down that road with him. I wanted to talk Bills. So that's why I didn't bring it up. But yeah, Sully, you know, he says things like that, and he has some Marshawn Lynch takes that I can't stand them. And I wanted to talk football with him. But anyway, Jerry Sullivan, for better or worse, or you love him or hate him, and he does sometimes with the trolling, and I agree with you 100%. But the guy has had like almost a four-decade career in sports journalism. He's been around a long time, very well respected. I've talked to many media people on this podcast through the years, and to a man and to a woman, they consider Sully among the favorites. He actually is a really nice guy. That's what I'm getting at. I mean, he just says in tweets, and I'm sure you know this too, some ridiculous shit. But anyway, I want Jerry Sullivan on my podcast because he's got a lot to say. Now, Joe from Queens, same kind of deal. And you've met him in person. In fact, you were with him last week again, weren't you? In person?
Yeah. He was in town for bachelor party stuff. I wasn't at the bachelor party, mind you, but.
No. But you went out Thursday for some drinks with him. And you know this. And I'll tell people listening, he's not as big of a douchebag in person as he appears to be on Twitter. Because I've told him this, and I'm not saying I've told him this to his face. You know what I'm saying? He's a lot on Twitter. Okay. His takes are a little over the top. I think he takes insults too personal. I think he gets too personal with people. Sometimes I think he crosses the line. That's his kind of Twitter persona. And I don't know if it's by design, you know, like some kind of times wrestlers have these characters. I don't know if he's being a character on Twitter or not. I think it's a real life extension of who he really is. But my point is, in person, Joe's a pretty good dude. I've only hung out with him one. In fact, me, you, and Joe did a podcast before at Casey's not all that long ago. But anyway, my point is, a lot of people don't like Joe, but I think Joe has a lot of interesting things to say. So that's why I have people like that on the podcast. This isn't just about who can come on and be the nicest person and say the nicest things about our sports teams that we love so much. You know, so I'm not going to apologize is what I'm getting at here, my long-winded ramble. I'm not going to apologize for having these type of guests on the show.
It's no fun having rah-rah people on all the time anyways, just to be like, hey guys, how great are the Bills? Oh man, they're so good. I love them so much. They're the number one team in my heart. Like, oh man, how about the Sabres? Oh, I love the Sabres. Like, that's freaking boring. Please. Yeah. And besides, if you had made it out last week for having drinks with Joe, it was Joe from Queens and Nate Geary and myself and a couple other people. And it was, I'm not a big talker anyway. Like, I'm a listener. I'm not really like a big jump in and I got to be heard. I got stuff to say. I'm not that kind of person. But when you're talking with Joe and you're talking with Nate Geary, man, there you don't stand a chance of getting a word in.
You don't have a chance.
Even if I did have something where I'm like, no, wait. No chance.
I love Nate Geary, but if he got paid by the word, Joe, if he got paid by the word on the air, he'd be the richest dude. He'd be a zillionaire.
I will tell you though, the sports on TV that night made for great, like running like MST3K commentary, because it started with the Sabres game, which they were playing Calgary that night, which got out of hand very quickly and they lost 5-0. And then we switched it over to the Patriots Falcons game, of which we watched New England just beat around Matty Ice and smack the Falcons around like it was nothing. And it was just kind of like sitting there going like, these guys look good. I don't like that. And like Nate is just doing his part. He's just, I don't know. I'm not so sure, but like, I don't know. The Bills can handle them. I'm just like, I don't know, man. They look really disciplined. I don't know. Like I got to be there to kind of be like, I don't know, man. I don't know. Like, a little nervous, but that made it pretty good. And we were at Brightsmith. So like that was my first time going there. That was nice.
I haven't been there. Yeah. I've heard a lot of great things about it.
I'll tell you, Nate flexed a little bit because, you know, they ordered a couple of things. They got their chicken sandwiches because him and Joe had to each get the chicken sandwich because it's incredible. And Geary flexed a little bit. He says, and like one of the appetizers comes out. And the waitress comes over. She's like, hey, this is courtesy of the chef. And I'm just like, look at this guy over here. He's getting stuff brought to the table. The chef's giving him like just bringing stuff out for us. Like, that's nice. And it was an elote dip, which was out of this world. It was so good. I don't know if you ever had elote before.
I have not.
It's like Mexican street corn, but like they did it in a dip form. Holy Jesus, that's good. Like I could have ate that whole dish. I would have gained 20 pounds sitting there eating it, but like, my God, it was good.
I really wanted to go. By the way, let's start here. I've been telling you about the New England Patriots for a couple weeks now. Now everybody sees it. I'm telling you, the Bills are, they are in a little bit of trouble. They're in for a fight. Let's just put it that way. That's the nicest way to say it right now. The New England Patriots, who traditionally play their best football this time of year, starting around now, with the most accomplished coach that there is out there, are playing really good football. And the Buffalo Bills are not playing really good football. Let's say this is the situation the Bills are in right now. And a couple weeks ago, we never would have thought this. At this moment right now, so people are going to watch the game on Thanksgiving night, Joe. If the Bills go out and they lose to the Saints, they're going to wake up Friday morning. They're going to be 6-5. They're going to be in eighth place in the AFC. And for that moment anyway, the Buffalo Bills are going to be out of the playoffs. That's the situation we're in right now. They're not playing well, and it's catching up to them.
No. It's not like something that came out of the blue. It's just something that got kind of covered over by, you know, throwing 38 points up on the Jets or, you know, slapping the Dolphins around in the fourth quarter after playing an uncomfortably close game with them for three quarters. You know, things like that where you're able to just be like, I don't know. See, they'll figure it out. They got it. They're too good. They can do this. It's fine. But then you start reading some of the stuff from, you know, that observations from players that, you know, from teams that be like Jacksonville. Like I read something, I forget who shared it, but it was Jacksonville players saying like, you know, these guys, all their heads are down. Like they don't have like that rally together sort of spirit. And I can kind of agree with that. I haven't seen like that same sort of thing on the sidelines this year. And I know that's very anecdotal, but like, doesn't seem totally like everybody's pulling for each other kind of thing. I don't know. But like when we talked about the Colts, like leading up to the Colts game last week, we basically laid it out like there's a bad thing coming for this team, whether it's going to be this week or down the road. But like this Colts game is potential to be really bad for them. And
we felt like it was a bad matchup. Yeah.
It's not just on the running side of it.
You and I aren't shocked by this. Well, maybe they were shocked that they lost 41-15, but we talked about it on the show last week. I thought the Colts was a bad matchup.
Five touchdowns to a guy. But like, it was like watching the game, and it reminded me a lot of that Saints game 4 years ago here, where Alvin Kamara ran for like 200 yards, and like, you know, Ingram ran for like another 100 and something yards. You know, it was just like they ran all over them. They couldn't stop anybody. They couldn't do anything. Like, that was a game where you worried about Drew Brees throwing all over you, and then it was just Alvin Kamara just like going ham. And then I very unfortunately mentioned that that was the game that made McDermott decide to bench Tyrod and then follow up with Peterman the next week, even though the Bills were in a playoff position. And it was just kind of like, wow, cool. Yeah, you got to give Peterman a shot. Yeah, sure. Like, okay. Yeah, Tyrod played bad that game, but like, was he that bad? You got to start this dude? Like, no, man. Like, no, at least there's no threat of that happening now. Like, there's no shot. There's going to be some kind of dumb move like that happening. But the question is, like, what do they learn from it? You know, like, playing in New Orleans is hard. Like, that playing the domes, that dome is tough. But, like, the Saints are coming off a really ugly loss to the Eagles, and they didn't look very good against the Eagles there. So, like, I don't know. Like, yeah, they're very weird.
This league.
Right.
It's been a weird season. We've talked about this. We talked last week about parity. There's no great teams in this league right now, and it's like every week a shitty team's beating a good team. Dude, Houston Texans went on the road and beat Tennessee this week. It's just crazy. How I feel about the Bills right now, Joe, is I'm concerned more because I kind of wish it was a schematic thing. You know, I wish it was like, all right, well, they need to run the ball, or they need to throw the ball, or they need to do this, they need to do that. What I see with the problem, and Leslie Frazier, the defensive coordinator, he kind of admitted this to his credit, which kind of, these coaches don't usually say a lot, but he said it wasn't about scheme as much. The Bills just got beat man-to-man on Sunday, and that's what was going on. They were getting pushed on both sides of the line, offense and defense. They were getting dominated, and I don't know what you could do. I mean, yeah, I guess you could say, you know, their will to win that battle needs to be more, and maybe that could be coached, or that can you can bring that out of them. But when it's a physical thing, that concerns me, because it's like, if you can't block, then you can't block. You know, there's nothing really that you could scheme up. And the trouble this year the Bills have been against these physical teams, which, by the way, horrifies me against New England, who's a very physical team. But the Colts are a physical team. The Titans are a physical team. Jacksonville sucks, but they're a physical team. Pittsburgh's a very physical team.
Yeah.
They're a very physical team. The Bills kind of struggle against that. I talked about this with Sully on the show just yesterday. Tyler Dunn had an excellent column in his Go Long Substack, and he was talking about basically, and I'm paraphrasing, but that the Bills are kind of front runners. You know, when they're better than you, they'll flex on your grave. I think he said something like that. You'll win by 30, they'll flex on you. You know, they got that swag. But when they get punched in the mouth, they don't know how to react right now. And it's becoming obvious. It's becoming a pattern. The Jacksonville game, to me, that the loss was ugly and it shouldn't mean that much in a way, but it was like the manner in which they lost, which was just Josh Allen's running for his life. They couldn't block on the line, and it was just it was an issue with the physicality of this team. This team's not very physical. They're not very physical. And the injuries mattered. I mean, Tremaine Edmonds and Starlo Tutele out definitely hurt the defense, and Spencer Brown being out hurt the offensive line a little bit, at least anyway. But I don't know. How do you think Starlo Tutele and Tremaine Edmonds make that much of a difference on Sunday?
I don't think Star would have made that much of a difference considering the way Taylor was running and the way that line played. It helps, but like maybe it takes away one touchdown. Maybe he only scores four touchdowns. Like that's where that kind of was at. I don't know that Spencer Brown, I said this before, I said this last week, and then Tim Graham wrote about it this week that
there's the weekly sirens.
I don't know. Maybe they're coming for the Bills. They're coming to pick them up in the ambulance. But I said this last week, and Tim Graham wrote about it this week, that if you're hinging your line success on a rookie, you know, third round pick, then that indicates there's bigger problems with what's going on. And I'm like, yup, 100%. Like that's 100% correct. And like that's totally the case. Like that's 100% what the case is with them. And it's wild that works out that way for them, because it's just, I don't know, man. A lot of what I saw from Allen, looking at his face, just watching his face and watching how he reacts. I saw a lot of deer in the headlights stuff, because he was just, guys were breaking through the line in different spots. Not like the rush, you know, the rush was coming from the same spot every time. It was, the line was leaky all over the place. And it was like, you got like five holes in front of you and you're like, okay, which one is somebody going to come busting through? And you don't know which one it is. And you've got like 2 seconds to figure it out. And like, that's impossible. Like the one, the tip drill interception there, like he was fading backwards, threw it off his back foot. And he was just like, oh God, I got to get rid of it. And yeah, of course that happens. Of course that kind of thing happens. And like, he's getting bad, you know, he's making bad reads. And, you know, I know Geary went very, very hard on saying like, it's not Allen's fault, but like some of these games, it's kind of his fault, right? Like,
I don't agree with Nate at all. I don't agree with Nate at all. Like, I mean,
he's getting paid $245 million, man. Like, you got to take some of that burden.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he is the leader. He's the franchise quarterback. But beyond that, Joe, I've said this. Mm-hmm. When they lost to Jacksonville 9-6, I put zero of that game on Josh Allen. The line didn't block at all. Josh Allen was running for his life, just like he was last year, or not him, like Patrick Mahomes was in the Super Bowl against Tampa. That's how bad the line was against Jacksonville. I mean, he was getting hit almost every play, having to step out of the pocket and make throws on his back foot. That was the Jacksonville game. Indy, the line wasn't great by any means. A lot of the mistakes Josh made, they weren't because the pocket crushed in on him, you know what I mean, collapsed in on him.
Right.
He made some bad decisions. He made some high throws, and they wasn't always because of pressure. Those two interceptions were not good. One of them was absolutely Josh Allen's fault. Josh Allen did not play well against the Colts. He was, maybe for the first time this year, I think Josh Allen was almost a liability to this team than he was an asset. There's a big difference to me. Say from the Jacksonville loss, where I just thought the offensive line was absolutely pathetic. I don't think the Bills' offensive line was pathetic against the Colts. I just think Josh Allen did not play well. That's my take.
Right, and it's different for, you know, every loss is different. Like the Tennessee game, Allen still made mistakes, but he, you know, put up a ton of yards, got them scores. The defense didn't do the job. You know, thinking back on some of these losses, it's always been something different. But these last two, like, you know, I mean, yeah, I can't fault Allen for the Jacksonville game because just putrid work by the line. But, you know, the receivers weren't getting open. Like, none of that was working. But, like, this game, I don't know, man. Like, I'm going through, like, the Bills stats here, like, by game and, like, checking, like, number of targets. Like, who's getting, like, which receivers is he targeting the most? And I've said, like, all along, like, Diggs is your number one guy. Get, you know, go to him. And every game, it's Beasley with the most targets, and Diggs is getting the same number of targets as the running backs. Like, I don't know, man. Seems like a bad idea to, like, have your best receiver be your second or third option. Seems kind of dumb, honestly. Like, that's – I don't – for the life of me, I don't understand why that's that way. Now, mind you, I'm positive opposing defenses are focusing on Diggs because he's the game breaker. He's the guy that does it. But if Allen's not looking at him, if Allen's not even like, you know, even like cycling back to him on his looks, like I don't understand what that problem is. Like Beasley's become such a security blanket for him because he's like, oh, I'm in trouble. Let me throw it to Beasley. Like, okay, I guess. Cool. Like, cool, you threw to him 15 times. He caught it 11 times for 45 yards. Way to go. Way to advance the ball up the field, man. That's gonna really shake those teams up. But, like, it's crazy to me that, like, you know, I think of the Jacksonville game, and they didn't target him until the fourth quarter when they were just trying, they were fighting to get back. And, boy, howdy, they started getting some yards and getting through and kind of crazy that it worked out that way. And you know, the Jets game, like he got targeted 13 times. Well, yeah, of course you're gonna feed everybody when you're able to just throw at will on a team that stinks. Like, cool. But like he got six targets this past week. How are you gonna beat anybody if you're just targeting your best receiver six times? That blows my mind. You know, and it was, you know, again, it was just dumping off to Beasley because he's you know, running around. He's kind of like, oh God, I gotta find my guy. And you know, throwing it underneath to a guy that's 3 or 4 yards out is cool to like save your neck, but you ain't gonna win games that way. Not against a team that's beating your ass in the line.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Back with Joe Yordan. So when I had Sully on yesterday, we were recapping the Bills game on Sunday. One thing that we really didn't spend much time talking about, that after I was done with the interview, I'm like, of all people, Jerry would be the one to have strong opinions on this. The Bills were at a competitive disadvantage because of COVID. I mean, it reared its ugly head. It has with this team. Starla Tutelay and Spencer Brown both out of that game, and they were both guys that the Bills could have used. Again, we just talked about Starla Tutelay. I don't think he would have single-handedly, you know, stopped Jonathan Taylor from running wild on them, but he is a boost to the defense, especially the running game. He is their best run defender on the defensive line, and it's not even close. We're at a point now where, and we knew this was coming. We talked about this during the all summer long leading up to the season, you know, because a lot of things that Cole Beasley said. The Bills, I don't know the exact stats, but I know that they're near the bottom of the league when it comes to vaccination rates. And now it's starting to, you know, Sean McDermott, who is usually very vanilla, very bland, doesn't really say much. He was on beginning of camp and was talking about the importance of vaccination. And he's saying all the right things this week, but you know, that guy, and Sully kind of mentioned this too, he's got to be stewing right now. He has to be stewing right now that his team is at a literal competitive disadvantage because of COVID. And we already saw what happened Sunday, and I'm confident in saying neither of these guys are going to be playing on Thursday night against the Saints either. This is putting this team at a legitimate competitive disadvantage, and it's hurting the team. It's hurting the team, Joe.
Yeah, and you know who couldn't have predicted this, honestly? Like, we were saying this before the season even started when you know, Bean says his, you know, he says this thing in the preseason where it's like, hey, you know, maybe we'll just cut guys that don't get vaccinated. Like, okay, cool. I think a lot of people are like, all right,
fine. The crazy one. Joe, but Joe, isn't, I don't know, I can't explain it. Star of Lil Tutelay, of all 53 guys on this roster, he opted out last year because of COVID. I just don't understand. And by the way, this isn't a report, but like there's rumblings from people that I trust, let's just say it that way, that forget about the Saints game with Star Lil Tutelay and Spencer Brown, that they have symptoms. And if that's the case and they're unvaccinated, that next game is against New England on December 6th, and that's the most important game of the year. It's not a certainty. Hopefully, they'll both be back. But it's not even a certainty that both those guys or even one of those guys will be back for that game. That is bad. Yeah. That's bad.
Yeah, and somebody pointed out to me that somebody called, and I don't listen to One Bills Live because I can't. I'm not a Bills fan. I can't get into it. Like, that's not for me. But somebody pointed out that somebody mentioned one of a caller had started going on a rant about Star about him sitting out last year because he didn't want to get COVID, the whole thing, and started going off at it. And Steve Tasker apparently, allegedly, you know, I have to say that because I can't verify it. I don't know for sure.
Sure.
But Tasker had interrupted him to say, he's like, well, you know, he's got a health condition that won't allow him to get vaccinated, which I'm like, okay, well, that changes the story completely. Because if that's the case, why aren't they leading with that? saying like, well, listen, he couldn't because he's got a health thing. He can't do it. Like, okay. Small minority that can't do it. Right. But like, why wouldn't you know about that to begin with? Like, how do you not, like, you have to have that clear with the league just to be like, hey man, you can't really count him because he can't get it. Like, he literally can't do it. Like, now, obviously if that's incorrect, okay, then, you know, whatever, he's a dumbass. But like, if he literally can't do it because it's a health thing, then like, okay, like that sucks. Like, the sucks all around. And it makes it even dumber that guys in the team wouldn't get vaccinated. Because, like, I mean, I would have thought last year after seeing Tommy Sweeney, you know, get myocarditis and like miss the whole season because of all this. And, you know, Deion Dawkins gets it during preseason, and he's had all kinds of, he talked about how difficult that was, that guys would still be like, no, you know what? I'm cool. I don't need this. And I can understand why McDermott was so mad in preseason. I can get why he's had to mute his takes now, because something with the team makes it so that, I don't know if they're just trying to present the face of like unity or trying to say like, no, we're all pulling for each other here. I got to wonder though, like, there's got to be people in that room looking at some of these guys going like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, you're interrupting this season because you're a jackass, because you're selfish. Like, you'll lay your body on the line for your teammates, but you won't get a needle stuck in your arm. Like, get lost, man. Like that's the kind of stuff I'd be saying. Like, Jerry Hughes kind of went off on Beasley about it, and then Jerry had to like kind of back off his words. And I don't know, Jerry hasn't said anything about that since. So I wonder if, you know, if Bean or McDermott was kind of like, dude, shut your mouth. Like, don't cause problems for us. And it's like, from Jerry Hughes, I'm just like, I ain't the one causing the problems here, coach or GM. Like, it ain't me. It's these guys. Like, they're causing the trouble. But
it's so, it's
frustrating, and it's drama for no good reason. Like, and it's drama for dumb reasons.
I haven't heard anything about what you were talking about with Steve Tasker, and I don't watch One Bills Live either. Not because I'm not a Bills fan or not even because I don't like them. I don't have, it's a time of the day where I don't have an opportunity to tune in anyway. But I'll say this, if that is true and it is a health condition reason why, shame on the Bills for not putting that out there, because for starters, it would prevent schmucks like us talking about it on the podcast and criticizing him in WGR and all these other outlets out there. It would be well known that he can't get the vaccination for whatever reason. So I don't know anything about that. Spencer Brown, again, a third round rookie. I get it. I guess I get it. If you've reached status where you're that important to your team, where you can get away with something like this, I mean, there's no circumstance that would make me not get vaccinated. But if I was a star quarterback or a star linebacker, whatever, that's one thing. But you're a third round rookie. Why would you? You know, I mean, come on, man. It's crazy because I can't believe that I'm even saying that Spencer Brown being out hurts this team as badly as it does, because he wasn't even supposed to be in the picture this year. But he's a critical player on this team now, because, first of all, he's a better right tackle than Darrell Williams, which is kind of sad, because Darrell Williams got a 3-year, $20-some million extension this offseason after playing right tackle this year. But Spencer Brown right now, anyways, head and shoulders better than him, and Darrell Williams is better at guard. So you're hurting two positions on this team by being out with COVID. That's the right side of your line that's screwed up right now.
And here's the thing that kills me, is that the entire preseason they talked about the Bills were very eager to pat themselves on the back about how, like, oh, we're above 80%, 85% vaccinated. We're good here. Like, we get to do things normal. We get to do whatever. Were all the guys cut vaccinated? Because why is the team rate so low now?
I don't know.
I mean, does that mean all your premier players are like running around without, you know, protection for themselves? Like, that's wild if that's the case. But like, how do you go from being like 80-85% to being like the lowest, least vaccinated team in the league or something like that? Like, that's nuts.
How hard would it suck, Joe, to have a team that's good, that's a contender, and it's not fantasy talk anymore. It's reality. There's a chance this team could get to the playoffs, and it's happening now. It's happening now. You know, Mitch Trubisky also missed time with COVID. Maybe Josh Allen gets hurt in the divisional round and Mitch Trubisky's not there to come in. You know what I'm saying? There's situations where, not just for the Bills, for any team, but I only care about the Bills for the sake of this podcast and discussion, where this is going to end up screwing them up. Beyond that, though, I want to circle back quickly. Tyler Dunn, when I said he had a really good column. Another thing that, and again, Tyler is one of my favorite people, but he talked about, you know, just beating up on these bad teams. And then I saw a stat. I'm not sure who put the stat out, so I can't give credit to anybody. But the Bills last year in games that were decided by 7 points or less were 4-1. This year in games decided by 7 or less, they're 0-3. Which basically goes back to what I was talking about with Tyler's column. This team, when they get punched in the mouth, they don't know how to fight back. They're getting rattled right now. The Bills were pulling out these tough games before. Now when the going gets tough, the Bills seem like they're kind of folding. And we saw a lot of that on Sunday. That's scary to me, man. Beyond the X's and O's, things like that are scary. But to your point, like we talked about last week, there's no great teams in the NFL right now. There's none. There's zero great teams right now. There's a lot of talented teams. There's a lot of paper champions out there. But there's no great team. So if you want to be pessimistic about the Bills, you can be like, well, they've kind of sucked for the last month. They've lost three of their last five. I don't think, to say that they've borderline sucked, I don't think that's that much of an exaggeration or reach. They've been pretty lousy. But if you want to be optimistic, well, hey, who's playing really good right now? Who, except New England, which, it's in the division, but, you know, there's no great teams out there. So the Bills are not dead, not by a long shot.
No.
But
it's very doom and gloom now, which I get, but yeah.
It deserves to be doom and gloom, though, Joe.
Well, yeah, they're farting away a great opportunity by being jackasses and, you know, being dumb about stuff. And also, like, I think some of it's a little bit of hubris, too, because, you know, I think back to the, you know, trade deadline and we knew what the issues were with the team. We knew that both lines could have used a little bit of a boost. I know the defensive line, they touted like, oh, we got nine guys. We can rotate them all in and out. Like, okay, fine, whatever. But you knew your O-line was in rough shape. You knew guys were not playing well, and you're just kind of like, no, we're going to stick with them. We're going to run with what we got. Like, okay, like that's an idea, but, you know, good luck with that. And now here it is coming to roost, you know, chicken's coming home to roost now, and it's kind of like, oh, maybe we should have done something. Like, you know, Brown misses this week. They bring back what's-his-nuts from preseason who Bobby Hart or Bobby whatever, Hart. Whatever his name is.
Yeah.
Bring him back, and it's like, he's no good.
No,
and bringing him back in, like you're just kind of like, well, he's there as a backup. Like, okay, man, sure, but like if that's your fallback option, I don't know, man. Like it's a lot of bad news, and people are, you know, they bitch about the running game, and it's like you don't want to. This team isn't a running team, but like, I don't know if Allen's going to play action, then you got to at least be able to know that at least they can run. You know,
yeah.
Every time you see a drop back to maybe hand off, you're like, yeah, okay, whatever, man. We're going back to cover. Like that's there's no way you can sell that.
I think the panic meter right now, or the panic radar officially should be turned on. I really do. When they lost to Tennessee, they should have won that game. A couple of mistakes. They should have won that game, and I truly in my heart think that they're a better football team than Tennessee, okay? Panic level zero for me for that game. The Jacksonville game, annoying, frustrating, but we've seen enough of shitty teams being in good teams. The Bills just didn't show up that day. They were flat, playing out. I don't think the Jacksonville would beat Buffalo again if they played 10 times. All right. I think it would be different. Panic meter, maybe a 2 out of 10. This Colts loss to me, the panic radar is high, man. My score is like a 6.5, maybe 7 out of 10, because the Colts did what scares me the most. A physical offensive line pushed them around, an elite running back, a quarterback who's okay, and a defense that's pretty good and confused Josh Allen, by the way. We didn't even talk about that. They confused Josh Allen into making some of his mistakes. This is a team you can see again in the playoffs. And what's going to be different about the Colts in the playoffs than what we saw Sunday? Nothing. They're going to run the football. They're going to block well. They're going to play bend but don't break defense and wait for the Bills to make some mistakes. I'm concerned about this. So we were talking about doom and gloom. There is a little bit of doom and gloom going on. Not a lot. Again, can they turn the season around? Yes, because I don't think there's any standout teams in the AFC that I don't think the Buffalo Bills could beat. I didn't think the Bills could beat Kansas City last year, quite frankly. I think the Bills could beat any of the teams in the AFC this year. I'm not saying they're going to beat any of them based on what we saw Sunday. Shit. You know what I mean? Not good. But one other thing, too, by the way, we haven't even talked about, Joe. Penalties. This is an undisciplined team on top of everything else. I think they're They're second in the NFL in penalties, but the team ahead of them has played a less game. So the Bills, for all intents and purposes, are the most undisciplined, penalized team in the NFL right now. Really weird.
Mm-hmm.
So we sit there kind of like almost dumbfounded what to say about this team, but it's like,
yeah,
I'm concerned. Well,
the penalties thing, the penalties thing kills me because, you know, just watching, you know, watching reactions on Twitter, the first reaction from fans is always to blame the refs for stuff happening. And it's like, don't put yourself in a position to do that. Like, don't commit so many penalties in the first place. And B, you're never going to get the benefit of the doubt if you're just doing dumb shit all the time. Like, that's right. That's just how it is. Like, you don't get a break. Like, when you start doing things consistently and it's kind of like, all right, man. Like, I know they're doing this. I bet, you know, I know referees are not supposed to like zero in on stuff like that, but like, you're going to notice it more if it happens all the time. Like, that's only natural. So like, just don't be stupid. But like, you know, the line penalties I get because it's like the line's getting blown up. Line's getting blown apart. They're trying to do whatever they can to save their neck. So of course they're going to grab guys and haul them down there. You know, they're going to do whatever, you know, kind of dumb stuff to do. And it's like, every time there's a holding call, it's like, okay, the defensive holding calls though, that I'd have a bigger problem with because the secondary should not have those issues. Like they can, you know, them getting, you know, blown up on routes or just, you know, taking a misstep or doing something where they're, you know, the receiver's getting an edge on them. It's like all those guys are they're better than most of the receivers in the league. There's no way they should be constantly just grabbing guys and tugging at them and getting, you know, getting all over them. Like can't be doing that stuff, man. Like that's the kind of stuff if I'm Leslie Frazier or I'm McDermott, I'm just screaming in my brain about it constantly. Like, you got to be kidding me. You cannot be doing that kind of stuff. And, you know, fans want to blame the refs, but like to me, blaming referees for a loss is the ultimate loser crybaby stuff. Like, just, you know, don't be like, oh, refs took it away from us. We got screwed. Like, no, you didn't. No,
well, you screwed yourself. There's zero merit to argue that when it comes to the Indy loss. You want to say the Jacksonville game was one of the worst officiated games I've ever seen. I still don't think ultimately that's why the Bills lost. They lost because the offensive line was just atrocious. But the referees are influencing. I'm not going to say they're dictating the outcome of games, but they certainly are influencing way too many games this year. Here's the bottom line with the Bills right now, Joe. They've played 10 games. They're 6-4. They've had three significant tests this year, and they failed two of them. Kansas City, Tennessee, Indianapolis, and they have failed two of those three tests. I'll say this, though. They're expected to be good this year. The bar's raised. You know, we're 6-4. Where the Bills are 6-4. Tampa Bay was 7-5 last year and won the Super Bowl. Again, the season is far from over. But when you have the bar raised like they do right now, and you play like you have this last 5 weeks, you're going to be subjected to a lot of criticism. And it's deserved. One more Bills question. I'm going to ask you the same thing I asked Sully on yesterday's show, and then we'll move on. I want to talk Sabres and get
let me ask you a question real quick.
Sure.
If that Bills Kansas City game happens next week, how are you feeling about it now after the way Kansas City's played the last couple weeks?
I'll answer your question by asking you a question and then giving you the answer after you tell me yours. Right now, and I asked, I got a reason for saying that. Sully, so I asked him, I said, if there was a gun to your head, I said, and your life absolutely dependent on it right now, remove the emotion, which for Jerry's very easy. Cause again, Jerry's not a Bills fan. You're not a Bills fan. So I know I'll get an objective answer from you. If your life depended on it right now in this topsy turvy AFC where teams are up, teams are down, and New England's very good right now, but they do have a rookie quarterback and they haven't really proven anything yet. But if your life depended on picking the team in the AFC that's going to end up in the Super Bowl right now, forget about our preseason projections right now today. Right. And you have to pick the team that's going to come out of the AFC and your life depends on it. Who are you picking? Who's going to be in the Super Bowl if your life depends on getting it right now in the AFC, at least?
Oh, in the AFC. Oh my God. I'd have to pick Kansas City. Me too. I have to. I've watched, like, their defense was hide your eyes awful. Like, they were the worst defense in the league the first four or five weeks of the season. The last 3 weeks, they've been beating the shit out of people. Like, it's a completely different setup. And I don't know what they've done. It's the same personnel. They haven't added anybody. You know, they haven't gotten anybody back. Like, that's a completely different way they're playing it. Spagnuolo's a good D coordinator. Like, I mean, I remember him with the Giants, and they, you know, they were able to scheme up ways to beat the friggin' Patriots in the Super Bowl twice with him. So like, I get it. But like that, they're doing shit completely different. Now, and it's like they're not doing it against garbage teams. Dallas is a damn good team. Green Bay, granted, it was, you know, it wasn't Rodgers playing, but like, still, it's Green Bay, man. Like, they're still good. Like, that's one of the better teams in the NFC. They made Dak Prescott look like garbage. They were on his back all game. They had him running around like crazy. I look at a guy, you know, if you're looking at a guy in the NFC that's Allen-ish, Prescott's kind of the guy, really, because Prescott can run. And he's got the good arm. He's got the receivers. And again, Dallas has their own COVID thing because Amari Cooper was out with COVID and Jerry Jones went off about it saying like, I can't believe he's putting the full blame on him. Like, I can't believe this guy's being that selfish. Like, we need the whole team to come together. But like, gun to my head, Kansas City's a pick. And they've got their shit together. They've done this the last two or three years now. Like, they play a garbage the first half of the year and they're just kind of like, all right, let's get it going. And now they look like they're getting it going.
I agree 100%, and that's why I said I was going to wait to answer your question to me, because when I asked Sully, for the record, if you didn't listen yesterday, he picked New England to win the AFC, and look.
That's a homer pick from Jerry.
The AFC's been this year.
That's a homer pick out of Jerry. Come on.
Well, his reasoning is they got the best coach, and they always play their best football later in the year. All fair points, and again, in this really weird AFC conference this year, hey, I'm not going to laugh at it. But yeah, I would pick Kansas City. I feel this way too. Kansas City was done earlier in the year. They were toast. Okay. The defense was beyond atrocious, and Patrick Mahomes was making some horrible, uncharacteristic mistakes. I mean, like some of the worst turnovers I've ever seen, especially from an elite quarterback. This conference was there for somebody to take it over and put them out to pasture. Did not happen. Now they've regrouped. Mahomes is obviously starting to play better. The defense is definitely playing better. The Chiefs are 7-4. They're going to win that division. They're probably going to win the AFC. They're probably going to end up with the number one seed. That's just a gut feeling. But regardless, I feel like this team, it looked like they had no chance of making the playoffs about a month or so ago. Like, they were done. It looked like, I mean, they barely beat the Giants at home on prime time on football. You know what I mean?
They were lucky to beat the Giants.
They were lucky to beat the Giants. They were done. They were done. And no team took over. Again, Baltimore gets trampled at home by Cincy. Tennessee can't even beat Houston at home right now, and Derrick Henry's done for the year. The Bills are a mess. We're watching that every week with their own eyes. The Patriots are ascending, but again, do you really believe in them? The Chargers are too up and down right now.
So are the Raiders.
Kansas City Chiefs. Yeah, I don't even count the Raiders. I mean, they're a decent team. I probably should, but point being is, the Chiefs are going to be tough. Now, I will say this, if the Bills play them in the playoffs, and I don't want to play them in the playoffs, let's just put that out there right now.
Avoid them at all costs.
Right, but if the Bills do play them, they do have the fact that they went into Kansas City and beat them. And I think mentally that will matter. That'll matter having a lot more confidence playing them as opposed to last year where I think they were doubting if they could beat them. So I do think that Kansas City game was important this year. But yeah, I got to go with the Chiefs. I tell you, we're not going to have to worry about is projecting if the Sabres are going to go to the Stanley Cup this year. You know,
that's a great segue.
You were in the arena. So by the way, Monday night, you were in the arena. Yeah. You covered the game for the Associated Press. The Sabres lost Monday night 7-4, two empty netters. So that score sounds a little more of a blow than it was. They did lose Sunday night to the Rangers with 0.4 seconds. That was horrible to watch. Now, obviously, the losses are piling up. Yeah, the losses are piling up now. And if you're out there judging on wins and losses, you know, some people don't care about the feed. They just judge on wins and losses. And I think they're like, 2-8-1 or something like that in their last 11 games. Put it this way. The Cinderella start, the clock struck midnight. All right, man. I mean,
it is
what it is. But again, you were in the arena on Monday. You covered the game for the AP. Two questions. Does this team look as good as I think they do, minus the goaltending, which was, again, really bad on Monday anyway, at least. And the crowd. What was the crowd like? I mean, granted, it was a Monday, but was it weird? Was it like almost, I don't want to say ominous, but it's nothing like you're used to when you've covered this team in the past. You know what I mean? It's
I was able to compare my drive. Yeah, it was 78, 79, I think, was the listed attendance. 7,879. So yeah, it was something like that. But my experience driving down there, and when I covered games before, whether it was the Athletic or NHL.com, I got down there as early as humanly possible because I needed to park for free somewhere down there because there's no way you're going to get me to pay $15-$20 every time I'm going to work
right.
to park at the game. And Sabres didn't give us parking down there because they're like, how can we do this? We don't know how we can set this up. And I was like, all right, guys, there's not like 500 parking lots down here. You could just be like, here's five spots. Here you guys park. Like, never mind that. But like when it's an AP game, I go down as needed. So I get down there, it's about 5 o'clock. And usually, before a game, even 2 hours before a game, there's some buzz. Like there's people, there'd be people at 716, it's Southern Tier now. Like there'd be people around on the streets, whatever. This was like when I drove down last year when there were no fans allowed at the arena and the streets were bare. Like there was a handful of fans walking around, some people going to the draft house, some people just kind of milling around outside Southern Tier, but like there's nobody down there. And I was like, okay, this was a little too easy to drive down by the arena. And you get inside and like warm-ups start and there's nobody in their seats for warm-ups, which usually you get people for warm-ups. You get some people down by the glass, like that's okay. And they start up for the game and 8,000 people spread out in a 19,000 seat arena. It don't look like 7,000 or 8,000 people, man. It looks a lot less than that. And I got to tell you, it's weird because everybody on that side of thing is trying really hard. The game press people, they're all trying to do everybody's trying to do their job fine and treat it like normal. Cause it's normal. Like it's a game, but like there's nobody in the building. So it's weird. The whole setup is just very creepy, creepy in like the haunted house kind of way, not like creepy in like the, this is a sketchy place to be. No. It's like, oh man, this place used to be full up. Even in the tank days, like this place would still be pretty full up, if not sold out. And it was like, wow, this is weird. This is really weird. And people go into the game, like they're happy to go to the game. Like they're just, hey, cool, it's a game. Good to have fun. But like, I mean, at least thankfully Columbus doesn't have a big following of fans that, flood into the arena to make it uncomfortable for the home team. But you can hear everything being shouted, which might get a lot more difficult as the season goes on for some sure. players, because you can hear everything. Like I'm talking like I could hear somebody yelling from the upper deck across the ice on the other side of the arena. If they yelled loud enough, I could make out what they said. Some guy like up in the corner screaming something, like shouting something, like some guy was being a jackass and like a couple dudes were like coming together and like getting ready to fight. And then some guy just yells out, "Kiss each other." And I'm like, okay, all right, we're at that level where it's the full on groundlings at the Shakespearean theater. Like, I'm like, okay. So it's weird on that respect. And like covering a game with the COVID, they still have the protocols going on down there, and you have to be masked up at all time. Like media people have to be masked up all time. There's no option. Like if you're on the media level, you have to have your mask on always. And when you go downstairs because they are doing like press conference stuff in the media rooms. So which is much better than doing Zoom shit. Zoom shit is awful. But like mask on always. Players don't have their mask on because they don't need it, because that's what they're doing. But like everybody else has to. So even though you can't get in the building without vaccination clearance, like it's still like that. But it's so, but like that's all apart from the game. But like the way the Sabres played, like they have no goaltending. Like that's the biggest problem. Like they would win more of these games if they could get some saves. But yeah. And it's crazy to think that Craig Anderson going down is what's causing all the problems with this. But like Tokarski, he had that great game. I forget against who. I just had like a
yeah. Stand I talked on his head about game. It last week.
You put the jinx on him.
I did. I talked about him. In fact, you tweeted about
he melted the next game.
Off. Yeah, it was against. Yeah, but in fairness,
it was a Calgary game.
It was the Calgary,
it was Calgary game.
In fairness, I didn't think it was that bad against Calgary. I thought a lot of the goals really weren't. Weren't his fault. The team was playing really shitty around him.
Yeah.
Who cares about the wins and losses? By the way, as we record this, the Sabres have very quietly have already sunk to 25th in the league in points with 16 points. They're 7-9-2. So I'm like, so if you are one of those guys who, you know, you're okay with them losing, and I don't think they're going to completely bottom out, because I don't think they're going to fall.
I don't think anybody's catching Arizona.
Arizona or horrible. Ottawa. Right. So
Ottawa, I think they'll get it figured out a little bit, but like,
well, I don't think they're going to finish dead last. But the point being is, I think they're going to be in that bottom 4 to 6, where hey, if you are Shane Wright guy and you know you want those odds and an opportunity, you're going to be up there anyway. But I'm not bothered by the losses, because I've decided that I'm going to focus on some of the positivity this year, because I am seeing some positive signs, and none of them are bigger than Tage Thompson. Tage Thompson, to me, has been the biggest bright spot of the team this year so far.
100%. Anyway,
two goals. Again, you were in the building. Two goals Monday. Dude looks like a star. I mean, that one-timer, holy shit, man. He's got 8 goals already, which that's already his. I think that's his career high already.
And it's ties his career high.
Ties his career high already. Look, the Ryan O'Reilly trade is never not going to be. The Ryan O'Reilly trade is never not going to be a horrible trade. It's always going to be a horrible trade, okay? But
it's an all-time
Tage Thompson. But Tage Thompson is giving the Sabres legit top six forward play right now, or top six forward talent for this year. I think his future's looking really good. So it makes you feel a little bit better. But anyway, forget about Ryan O'Reilly. That's not Tage Thompson's fault. He had no control over that.
It's ancient
Tage
history.
Tage Thompson's looking damn good. He's looking damn good. It's not a facade. I don't think it's a facade. I mean, he's making some really good plays out there.
You know, I agree. And the fact that he's doing it at center is even better, because it's not a position he was supposed to be playing at all, like when he was drafted. Like, it's extremely good. And there will be something I'll be doing for Noted Hockey, and I got to get off my ass and just send the questions to Jack Han to have him like break this down for me. But like, he's being the coaching stuff and like breaking tape down and doing that. So we discuss things, and Tage Thompson is something that we're going to be discussing a little bit there. I mean, at least having him, I'm going to ask him a question. He's going to teach me and everybody else reading how it goes. But yeah, it's really nice to see this going well for Tage, because there was a lot of stuff put on his shoulders to do this. You know, I mean, he's coming off shoulder surgery, and you know, he is the last guy left from that trade. And it's felt like the organization was, you know, they threw him a 3-year deal, before last year, 3-year extension, or, you know, after coming out of his entry level deal, I think it was, they gave him a 3-year contract. So, so there was pressure there, because the team is just like, no, man, we're going to make you something because we need to, because of that stupid trade. Because again, the only thing that motivates Bagulas is being embarrassed, and that trade embarrassed them, embarrassed everybody, embarrassed the entire organization to do that. So they're just, you know, it's kind of on Tage's back to come through with that. But like, that doesn't matter to Tage. He didn't give a shit about that. He cares about getting his game going and playing well, which he is doing, which is great. But yeah, like Cousins, people are getting kind of bummed that Cousins doesn't have as many points. Dude's playing awesome. He's playing absolutely fantastic. And he's got two line mates that can't do anything to help him out. Like, there's pucks die on some of these guys, like Kajula, like, you know, he's a 13th forward. Vinny Hinostroza is nice. Like, he's a good complimentary guy, but man, they got to get another guy to help on that wing. Like, I think when Mittelstadt comes back, that'll help them like kind of shuffle the lines around a little bit to make it easier. Maybe Mittelstadt rides with Cousins. I don't know. Maybe you do something like that, but he's got to have somebody else that can like handle passes with his line, because he should have way more points than he has right now. He's playing good.
Really, really good, man. I would say the biggest bright spot for the Sabres right now, looking into the future, would probably, which is kind of weird considering Sam Reinhart played very well at center last year, and Jack Eichel's obviously been their franchise center, is I think the Sabres look pretty good at center right now for the future. Pretty set up, at least anyway, between Mittelstadt, Cousins, Tage Thompson, Payton Krebs. I mean, you got some talent there down the middle. I mean, we'll see who develops. Or they don't always work out that way, but it looks pretty promising. Again, I've asked you this a million times to be a salesperson for the Sabres if you want to excite fans. To me, that's a valid, but now it seems kind of valid. I think the middle looks pretty good. Now, I don't know if all four of those guys will end up being centered, Put it this way. Tate Thompson should, let me ask you this. Tate Thompson should definitely remain at center, right? Based on what we've seen.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm just like going through my head because somebody put into my head this morning that, and they said, you know, hey, you remember back in that 14-15 season when Gergensen's had 15 goals and 30 points and because he was the by default number one center on that god awful tank team. And I was like, yeah,
tank
and
they team. Go,
what if that's Tage Thompson right now? Like he's the default number one center and he's putting up all these points. And I'm like, no, don't tell me these things. I don't need to hear that. Like that's not the thing I need in the back of my brain to be like,
I don't buy
maybe
that.
He's just doing stats, this because of bad. And no, I do not buy it either. Like, but like,
yeah, I was going to say that
it's the still gnawing at the back of your brain being like, yeah, it's just that like that. Like I can't, I'll never not get that out of my head now. And I'm going to be like, well, now I need to see what he does next year. I need to see how he finishes out this year. I need to see more, which is good. I do want to see more Tage. I do. Like,
I feel like Gergensen had ugly goals that year. I mean, not, I don't say ugly goals, but Tage Thompson's got some shit that you're going to see. Yeah. And you're going to, Tage Thompson scoring goals and making plays that you see on ESPN highlights. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. The numbers might indicate a similarity for sure, but
right.
One more Sabres
point. Yeah, no, no, Tage is a better offensive player than Zemgus is. And Zemgus, listen, Zemgus is a fine player, but like Zemgus had to be the number one center that year. He had no choice. Yeah, and, yeah. You know, Tage is kind of that way. It's kind of that way by default. I don't like some of the shuffles Granato's made with his lines lately. And it's, you know, just swapping guys on the left side into different spots. Like I don't like it. Maybe he's just trying to get a feel for like how things will be when Mittelstadt comes back. I don't know. But like some of these moves, I don't really dig how they've worked. Like he took Eakin out away from Opozo and Gergensen's. And I hate that move. That line was doing really well. He took Asplund off the line with Thompson and Olofsson. I don't really care for that. He put Asplund with Gergensen's and Opozo. And I'm like, I asked this question to Lance. I'm sitting next to Lance Lasowski in the box. And I asked him, I go, is the sacrifice of Eakin's play with those two worth the offense you might get from Asplund playing with Gergensen and Opozo? And I'm like, I don't think so. I don't think one helps out the other one there. But like that's minutia stuff. Like that's stuff that can change next game immediately. But
when are they expecting like, Mittelstadt back, Joe?
Great question, because I don't trust anything the Sabres say about injuries. Because no, straight up. Olofsson was, he played Sunday? Yeah, he played Sunday. Came back Sunday, was it?
Yeah, he came back Sunday against the Rangers.
48 hours before that, they said he was week to week. After saying for 3 weeks before that, he was day to day. When him, Jokiharju, and Mittelstadt were all out at the same time, Granato was asked, like, who do you see coming back first? And he said Mittelstadt. Well, Jokiharju came back last night, or came back against Columbus, so Jokiharju and Olofsson are both back. Mittelstadt's still out. I don't know. Like, I can't trust anything they say. It's nuts that it's that way. But like, I don't know, man. That's frustrating to me because it's like, just be straight. Like, it's not even like you're getting an advantage by just constantly punting it down the road and saying like, no, day to day. Oh, he's got a thing. We just got to get figured out. Be fucking straight up. Just tell us. Dan Bylsma used to be straight up. It's like, he was straight up to a fault because, you know, like I remember in preseason when Dmitry Kulikov he got hit along the boards right where the door opens, and like hit him like square lower back, and Bylsma was like, we're like, hey, what's the deal with Kulikov? And he's just like, well, he's got kind of hurt his backside. Like Kulikov basically had like a busted tailbone from where he got hit. You know, how he went into that edge by the door, and like dude was in pain, like in really bad pain. And Bylsma was kind of like, you know, trying to make it a little bit funnier than it was. And like, I don't think Kulikov really liked that. I don't think the team liked that, like having a guy just being like, hey, I know you're being truthful, but like, hey, maybe just knock that shit off. But at least he would tell us how long a guy would be out for correctly. Like,
right.
He didn't just like punt it down the road and say, oh, I don't know. We'll see what happens. Like, fuck, man. Like nothing irks me. Like I expect to get lied to when you're in media by teams. Like teams are going to lie all the time, But when it's injury stuff, man, you're going to be found out you're a goddamn liar when you keep saying something. Oh, no, he's still day to day. It's like, well, it's been a month. Tell me what's the truth here. So, yeah. So I don't know. Maybe Mittelstadt plays Wednesday. Maybe he plays Friday. Maybe he plays in March. I don't know. We'll see. I don't know. Maybe he'll never play. I don't know. I don't know. Like it's so stupid. It's so stupid. It goes back to last year too. The friggin' Eichel. When the game he sat out, where Kruger said, this was Kruger's undoing last year too, where Kruger said, I was like, oh, he got a little banged up in morning skate and that's why he didn't play. Then the next day, you know, Jack practices or like he gets ready for the game. He's like, hey, so what happened in practice that you got hurt? And he's like, no, that didn't happen then. It happened like the game before. Like, I don't know where you got that from. And it was like, then Kruger immediately, like in the press conference afterwards, is like, hey, why'd you lie to us, dude? And he was just like, oh, no, that's what I was told. It's like, dude, I'm like, come on, stop fucking lying, please. Like, just like, if lying is your way to get a coach thrown under the bus, then congrats, I guess you did it. But like, stop bullshitting us, man. Like, Sabres fans got to deal with enough shit without being lied to about how long the guys are going to be out of action. Come on.
One more Sabres thing that I want to wrap up with our starting five draft that we do every week. We've spent time on this podcast, I don't want to say necessarily a lot of time, but certainly time talking about some of the deficiencies or shortcomings of Rasmus Dahlin's game. And it's been very well merited. I mean, he still continues to struggle, especially on the defensive side, I'm talking. But you look at the numbers, and against Columbus, he made a couple of mistakes in the third period that were a little bit frustrating, but he also had a lot of really nice plays. Played 26 minutes against Columbus. He's got 12 points in 18 games this year. He's second on the Sabres in scoring. He's certainly coming around offensively. Do you feel like, and again, this is almost like a week-to-week discussion when it comes to somebody like him who's still young and hopefully anyway ascending, but the Sabres have played three games since we talked last. Have you liked what you've seen from him over the last handful of games?
It's been better. Certainly to the eyes. I think some of his confidence is coming back a bit. He had some move against, it was a little bit later, I want to say it was early third period against Columbus, or maybe it was end of the second, where he picks up a puck right before going in the zone, and he's got a Columbus player coming right at him, and he just did like a little like shoulder shimmy or just like one little fake, and the guy bit hard, and he was whoop right around him. And I was like, that's what I need to see more of. I need to see him being confident enough to be able to do stuff like that. The defensive end of things, how can I judge the defensive end of things when everything the other team is throwing on net is going in? I can't.
Yeah.
I can't.
Plus, he ain't never going to be Mike Ramsey or Bill Height. He's never going to be Mike Ramsey anyways.
No player now can play like that and stay in the NHL. Like, you're not going to, like, nobody can be a zero goal, two assist guy for an entire season in the NHL now. You cannot be that way unless you're blocking 900 shots a season and you might as well be playing goalie. You ain't playing in the league doing stuff like that. So like, it's fine. Like, there's still a lot of stuff to work through, but I still think, and I say it half kiddingly, but half like, I'm just kidding, but maybe get him and see a sports psychologist to break him out of like whatever the frig happened to him. Yeah, I said this before on here, but like, man, just get him out of his own head. Cause hockey player being in their head is the worst thing, because if they're actively thinking about what they're supposed to do next on the ice, they're five steps behind, because then they're going to get their doors blown off. They're going to get made to look a fool, which I've already seen happen to Dahlin a couple of times a few weeks ago. But like, just some of that offensive confidence I like seeing coming back, because that means he's feeling more comfortable all around. Because if he's affected by how poorly he thinks he's playing defensively, or how poorly he is playing defensively, that offensive game ain't there either, because then he's just kind of like, all right, well, I guess I just shoot it from, you know, the blue line and do this and, you know, just do whatever. I don't get that from any defenseman ever. Like, I don't need it from him. So seeing him being creative with the puck and see him being slick with the moves is a good sign as far as I'm concerned, like, because he doesn't do that stuff recklessly. Like, that's him playing with confidence.
Okay, fair enough. All right, let's finish with our starting five draft. And, last week we did TV talk show hosts. Let me say this, and I said it last week on the show. I wasn't feeling that category, and I was just being completely honest with you. I said, we're not, like, really mailing it in, but I wasn't really feeling it. I did end up squeaking out, quite literally squeaking out a win. 51-49.
Wow, 51-49.
You made it close.
I should have been boosting that way more than I did.
Let me give a recap of what the draft, how it went down. So I had 51%. I had the first overall pick too. I took David Letterman, Oprah, John Stewart, Arsenio Hall, Larry King. Joe selected Conan O'Brien, Johnny Carson, John Oliver, Craig Ferguson, Jerry Springer. We agreed on this too. It was probably, there wasn't a ton of interaction, not a ton of votes, and not really a surprise. So yeah, I'm not surprised about that. I would say this now, but I still like to analyze it anyway. What I was wrong about and what I think made it, because you predicted last week on the show would be about 60-40. You thought I would win 60-40. That's what you said.
Mm-hmm.
I would say this. If I'm surprised about one thing, I thought picking David Letterman first would be, I remember last week I compared it to picking Tony Soprano in an HBO one. I was wrong about that. Johnny Carson, there were a lot of people that said Johnny. Now, again, there wasn't a ton of interaction this week, but I will say a lot of people said Johnny Carson should have been number one. So that didn't go.
I did run it. Yeah, I ran into a couple of people that were like, oh, man, too bad you didn't get Letterman. I was like, yeah, but every late night talk show host on this list looked up to Carson. They all worship Carson. Yeah. I was like, that's why I felt pretty good picking Johnny Carson.
I think if I would have put a separate poll up saying who's the best, Johnny Carson or Letterman, I think Carson would have won that poll. So I was wrong about that. I thought Letterman would have gotten a lot more traction than he did.
I think it won you that.
I would say this.
I absolutely think it won you that.
The small margin, I think ultimately, I think John Oliver was a good pick, right? I think he's a great host. I think he's funny. And I think he's, but I don't know that he resonated with fans, with voters. I would say this, to your credit, you played this game with integrity. Like if you would have said, remember two weeks ago, I took you to,
I told you straight up I was fishing for votes.
I was fishing for
you
votes. I got punished for it. I think if you would have taken a more mainstream guy, or girl, like maybe an Ellen, even if you don't like Ellen, but like Ellen or maybe Phil Donahue or Dr. Phil or something like that, I think that might have gotten you 2-3%. I agree.
You would have won against Dr. Phil, you would have won 95-5. Deservedly so.
Craig Ferguson got a lot of praise actually with your fourth pick. And Springer was kind of up and down. You know, some people love him. Some people think he's a clown.
Some people thought it was trash. And it was like, yeah, it doesn't count. Like, okay.
But John Oliver.
People got on us both about Oliver and Stewart because they're like, they're not talk show hosts. It's like, bullshit, they're not. Like, those are completely talk shows. Like, they have guests. They have people they talk to. Like, they do comedy. Right. Like, come on, man.
Well, it was close. It was close. Again, not our best poll, but it was close. It's hard. And we talked about this before we started taping. So this week we're going to do female vocalists over the past 40 years. I don't want to throw this out right away. By doing it over the past 40 years, that eliminates people because this would have been, it's hard to do now. It would have been impossible because then you had people like Aretha Franklin and Janis Joplin and, you know, like Billie Holiday, if you want to go way back in the day, and Etta James.
Ella Fitzgerald, and, you know, people, like all that stuff.
Ella Fitzgerald, people like that. It would have just been absolutely impossible. If anything, you would do, maybe we'll do someday a category with female vocalists pre-1970 or something like that. But this week we're doing it over the last, say, 40 years. All right. We'll keep it at about 40. All right. So I had the first.
This is since like 19, basically since 1980, essentially.
Basically since 1980. Because it's tough. Because if you said the 70s, if we would have done 50 instead of 40, I looked at some artists that I think if we would have been from the 70s, like Aretha Franklin. She had a lot of hits in the 70s, so she would have been eligible. She would have been a player on this list, but not definitely not the 80s.
That would have been tough because that's a lot of 50s and 60s action too.
Absolutely.
From her.
I agree. I have no idea how this is going to go. By the way, we talked about this before. I'm going to put something up next week. We're going to start taking some suggestions from fans. This is getting harder and harder and harder. I mean, we've done so many of these now. We've done, probably 25 of these. It's not easy to come up with something every week, but we keep trying. So if anyone out there listening has suggestions, tweet at one of us and maybe we'll do that draft. But anyway, female vocalists past 40 years, and you have the first pick.
I this kind of goes back to another time we did one of these, but I think this is a slam dunk number one, Whitney Houston. I think Whitney, is an all-timer with such a tragic finish, but like, I don't know. There's another, at least one or two other options I think that would make for number one, but I think Whitney's too good. It's so sad the way everything ended with her and like, you know, the reality show and the drugs and all that stuff, but like, goddamn, what a voice, like what a singer. Separate, and like so many hits.
Off subject, because you said that, I've noticed it before, but isn't it crazy how many amazing musicians die so much before their time? It's just incredible for whatever. Sometimes it's tragic, self-inflicted reasons. Sometimes it's just whatever, you know, illness or whatever. But anyway, Whitney was.
I'm a big grunge fan. You don't have to like. You're preaching to the choir on that one. Like, somehow more grunge guys have died than like guys from the '60s and shit. Like, that's crazy.
I was really hoping that you would somehow not pick her. She was number one on my list as well. And I'll say this. My number two is easy. And then after number two, I think you started to get into territory. And by the way, this is female vocalists. It's not necessarily the most successful female singers of the last 40 years. This isn't all about the charts and stuff like that. I just want to make sure that that's clear too.
Although the votes are probably going to go that way, but you know.
Maybe, but I'm going to try to be as clear as possible. I'm going to use the word vocalist instead of best music stars or whatever, or female music stars of the last 40s. So it's about singing to me. Like, this is the voice. All right. So you got Whitney one. Great pick. That was my number one, too. My number two, and this one's easy, or my first pick, I should say, Celine Dion. I'm definitely have her. I love Celine Dion. I think she's a weirdo, though, to be honest with you, man. But I'd be remiss. I have to pick her. I'm not going to really explain why. It goes without saying. So Celine Dion is there. This is where I don't know that there's... I think Whitney and Celine, to me, were one and two. And then after that, you can start to make cases for a lot of people. And I might have one that might be controversial. We'll see. Because it'll be a late round pick if I do. All right. Ugh. I'm going to ride. God damn it. I did not anticipate being this stuck so early. I don't know why I'm rattled. This isn't even like a surprise. Like, Whitney going number one overall shouldn't be shocking to me. You think I would be better prepared? I guess my mind's
on that. I knew I couldn't leave her on the board for you either. Because not only are you going to take her instantly, but also then I'm passing on Whitney. I can't do that.
You know, I'm going to do it, man. She's got a brand new album out, which quite frankly, I've only heard one song from, and I like it, but I'm going with Adele. I have to go with Adele. She's some of these are just no explanations really needed. Her albums have been incredible. And this is what I think her third album that's just dropping now. And she's one of those singers. And by the way, she's very personable too. Like, I've seen her on a couple talk shows. She's actually really funny. I'm not going to explain a lot here with these, but Celine and Adele are my first two picks. Now you have two. Let's see if this bites me. I was trying to hold off one round.
I think taking Adele there, I mean, hot, like she's red hot right now. So like that's fresh in the mind. So that's good. But also like it's earned. Like she's an unbelievable singer.
Like, let me one more thing, Joe, before
incredible.
Before your picks, I said I wasn't going to explain, but this needs explanation. Some singers are incredible live. Like, some singers sound incredible in the studio, and then you get them live, and they're, Adele sounds freaking amazing live, and this is about vocalists, so I feel better about her. All right, you're up for two.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm 100% with you there. I got to take Mariah Carey. Like,
that's who I was trying to get
the range, with. The range, and, I mean, it, you know, it is the hits, but, like, nobody's had that kind of high range as a singer. And I know it kind of tweaks people out when she hits those really high notes, but like ain't nobody else doing that. But like her voice is incredible. She's an ultimate diva, hot, but like
you could have made a case for her being number one when she first hit the scene. Like when she first became a star, her voice was just absolutely nuts. Now it's completely gone now and it's shot and she's cuckoo Carrie nowadays. You know what I mean? She sounds terrible live. Horrible life today, but this is over the last 40 years. You could have made a strong case for her to be number one. I tried to sneak her and hope that you would forget her. I almost took her over Adele. All right, anyway.
No, I mean, listen, I don't think you would have gone wrong either way. My next pick's going to be Amy Winehouse. Her, that's another one where way before her time, but
sure.
Holy smokes, what a voice! Like, just distinctive, commanded your attention immediately, and like she sang like kind of like how the singers from like the 30s and 40s would sing, but like, you know, it was a modern voice, and like you'd hear her talk, and like she's got like the, you know, the really thick British accent, and then she's singing this voice, and you're like, oh my god, it's like a female Freddie Mercury, because Freddie Mercury spoke like he was a plumber from Brighton the way he spoke, and then he'd sing, and you're like, my god, what a voice! But like, that's the same thing for her, man. She was, whew, and it's good so pick. Sad, but like, damn, what a voice!
That's another one. I forgot. I didn't forget about her as a vocalist, but I forgot about, you know, her passing, unfortunately, so young. It's just, yeah, it's so sad, and a very unique voice too. Like nobody mm-hmm. sounded like her. Good right. picks, man. These are good picks. All right, so I got two here. One, look, man, she's a Lady Gaga, all right? I don't know how people feel about Lady Gaga, and I really don't care how people feel about Lady Gaga, but she is an absolutely great. Incredible vocalist. Has been for a while. Yeah, I feel good about her. All right, here's the other one, too. This one, I don't know, and shame on people if they don't like this. Alicia Keys is like my queen. I call her my queen every time I see her on TV. Beautiful person, great voice, so talented. Again, you know, Joe, we always try to, I feel like when we have somebody's dress, we try to sell our picks. But with a lot of these female vocalists right now, they sell themselves. Like, what am I going to say about a Lady Gaga or Alicia Keys that hasn't been said already? Alicia Keys. All right, so I've picked four. Oh, so you got two more now, and then you're done. I feel like these last couple picks are going to probably define how this poll goes.
And yeah, and this is tricky because we get into that sort of pop.
It's hard now, I
think. Rock category where the singing's different, where it's not exactly like, oh my god, the vocal, you know, where you're just kind of like, you know, your hair's blown back and you're like, man, my god, what a singer. And we're also at the point of the draft where it's like, how can we get some extra votes out of this? Maybe
you don't want to blow it in the back of your mind, right?
Like, I don't know. Maybe I need some insurance here. Cause there's two that I've got in mind that are just pure class singers, just incredible singers. And there's a couple others that I really love because they're great rock singers, and I don't know. It's they need to be measured differently for what they do. But I'm going to stick to my guns here. I'm going to go with Annie Lennox.
Okay.
It's one of my class singers. Annie Lennox from the Eurythmics, her own stuff. Friggin' great voice. And yes. Chrissy Hynde from the Pretenders.
Good pick.
Chrissy Hynde is a, holy smokes, what a voice. Leading a rock band and just being like, whoa, okay. Like, this girl can hammer it home. And like, it's a smooth voice. Like, she doesn't have to scream. She doesn't have to shout or anything like that. She just owns it. Like, that's fantastic. So yeah, like I split the difference. I did one rock, one class voice there. So yeah. Although Annie Lennox with the Eurythmics, I guess, is a rock voice. I don't know.
I would say, again, if this is all about only mainstream and votes, which, by the way, it shouldn't be. I want to throw that out there, right, too. Chrissy Hynde, some people might not be familiar. That would be my concern. If our life depended on winning this poll, I would be concerned. Mm-hmm. But I think that is an excellent pick, man. I absolutely love her voice. That's a great sleeper pick. All right. I only got one more left. Shit.
Yeah.
I only got one more.
Good luck.
I mean that
because there's too many choices. That's what I mean. Not good luck finding one.
I'm going to go with the controversial one because you weren't afraid to take someone who might not be as well known to the mainstream, at least younger people anyway, mainstream with Chrissy Hynde. And maybe you can even make the same case for
Annie Lennox even too.
I'm going to make my pick based on what I want and not necessarily what I think might hold the best. I'm going to tell you the two that I was really torn on that I'm not taking either of them. Kelly Clarkson, I do love Kelly Clarkson too. and Christina Aguilera, who I think is an absolutely incredible vocalist. I think they're both legitimate picks, and I do think they would poll well with fans. But I'm telling you who I'm going to take. And this is why I said it's a little controversial, because you might argue that she was better in the 70s than the 80s. But she had too many good hits, and I looked it up in the 80s as part of a group to not be included. And that's Ann Wilson from Heart. She might be the most powerful rock singer, or my favorite powerful rock singer, male or female. I absolutely love Ann Wilson's voice, man. One of my favorite singers of all time. And again, this is one of those ones where, you know, maybe if instead, if you would have picked Kelly Clarkson or something like that, I might have went back with Christina Aguilera. But you were gutsy enough to take a pick that was a critical pick to you, as opposed to maybe not a box office pick. So I am going to say Ann Wilson, and I'm going to live or die with it. I don't know. Dude, well, I love Ann Wilson, man.
No, dude, Heart friggin' rules. And the way Nancy plays guitar, goddamn. Like, just a sick guitar player. She's incredibly good. Even like seeing them, like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame performances or whatever, like she just comes out, she just shreds, and it's like, goddamn.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Like, good shit.
Did you hear them do that? It wasn't Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It was Kennedy Honors, Music Honors. They were inducting Led Zeppelin, and Heart, along with some choir, did a cover of Stairway to Heaven. It was one of the most amazing things I've ever heard in my entire life, man.
Mm-hmm. And I got a soft spot for Ann Wilson too, because she like teamed up on a song with, was it Soundgarden or was it? No, it was Alice in Chains. Like, she just did like some backing vocals with like it was on one of their EPs. I forget what song it is, but like, she does like the backing vocals too. And you're just like, whoa, all right. That friggin' rules. I didn't expect to hear Ann Wilson on that. Two that I would, I'll give you the other two that I was looking at. The class voice was Sade. Sade.
Good one.
God damn. Like,
love her voice.
Even to this day, still has the voice, still is just like, whew, like, you're just kind of like, whew, all right. Like, Sade, knock your socks off, man. And the other one was Belinda Carlisle. Because I know the Go-Go's were like super poppy, but like, when she did some of her solo stuff, man, she could bring it. Like, she is good. So yeah, those are the other two that were really on my list.
We could have done a draft of female group lead singers, or not even necessarily female groups, but female lead singers from groups, which maybe would have broke this down. Because I'm looking, I'm like, I like every pick you made, and I like the honorable mentions that you just said. And we've only like half even scratched the surface of people who would have been good picks. A lot of people say Pink, Sia. Yeah. I love Sia.
Sia's great.
I love Toni Braxton. Mary J. Blige, very popular, a great singer.
We skipped over a few. we sure skipped did. A lot, man.
Wait till I get to the last one. Another one that I considered, I did not pick her because I didn't think it would pull. Well, I didn't pick her because I just didn't think, I thought there were five that were better, but I like Alanis Morissette's voice a lot too.
Yeah.
And I thought it was different at the time. But the one that neither was even mentioned, that I guarantee, well, I don't want to guarantee but
I know what you're going to say, Beyonce. Madonna.
Madonna.
Jesus, Beyonce.
Beyonce.
Oh, we didn't say Madonna either.
Jennifer Hudson. Well, I'll say this. And I thought of Madonna when I came up with this category. And I wanted to make sure we said vocalist. I don't think Madonna was one of the all-time great female vocalists. She's one of the all-time great female performers.
Like,
she hits music. I love her beats. I love her melodies. I love the songs. But I don't think Madonna's on the same level when it comes to being a vocalist as these people that we've selected. But Beyonce, I'd be surprised if we don't get a lot of shit for not taking Beyonce. I'd be surprised.
I predict we're going to get, I know one friend of mine will absolutely curse us both out for not picking Beyonce. And the Bay Hive is a strong hive, man. We might hear it. We might really hear it, because I don't know. It's easy to get distracted by like the Whitney Houstons and the Mariah Careys and the Adeles, because you just think vocalists, and you start thinking like solo performers that just like own it. And like, yeah, she had Destiny's Child or whatever, but like she's been a solo artist for way longer than Destiny's Child was around. And I don't know what it, I don't know. I don't know if she falls into that Madonna category where it's like, as a performer, she's in a like top three performer all time. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. I haven't, I don't think of her as like a singer with a voice where you're just like, whoa, let her bust out the, you know, have her bust out a ballad, like hit all those notes. But like performer, hell yeah. Like her, like any of her performances are out of control. Great. So I don't know. That would be my only defense, but it will not be heard by those that will be mad at us about not picking her.
let me recap our picks here. But before I do that, I'm looking, and you know what, I look at this draft. Well, first let me get the picks out again. So to recap, Joe selected Whitney Houston, Mariah Carey, Amy Winehouse, Annie Lennox, Chrissy Hynde. I selected Celine Dion, Adele, Gaga, Alicia Keys, and Ann Wilson. I see this being a lot like the Adam Sandler draft that we did a couple weeks ago. I feel like from 1 to 5, I'm not saying my depth is better than yours this time. I definitely think it was better in the first with the Adam Sandler draft. I think these are across the board are great picks. I think the public might think that I have more depth, but just like with Adam Sandler, when you took, when you got Happy Gilmore and Billy Madison, I think with you getting Whitney and Mariah and the same team, I think you have a really top heavy draft where I think that's going to resonate with a lot of people that you got Whitney and Mariah.
You've got a lot of the current pop.
Yeah.
Hit like Lady Gaga and Adele. Like that's current pop, like hammering at home.
And that's like, part of the reason why I wanted Ann Wilson though, too, is I didn't want to have five singers that are still current today and, you know, popular today. So I don't know. We'll see how it plays out. That Adam Sandler one, by the way, was you won that 51-49. I'm going to say this
by
is
like,
going to be
one vote, two votes, maybe.
Yeah.
Is that the close? Was that the
like
super
that.
Close one?
No, yeah. No, that wasn't the virtual tie, but you won this one 51-49. And again, okay. I won last week 51-49. You've obviously crushed me in most of these, but let's see if I get a winning streak going. I'm predicting that it's going to be within
be close.
6 points. I think the poll is going to be winning 6 points. We'll see.
If we're doing an over under on that, I bet the under. I think it's going to be a lot closer.
Yeah.
That'd be nice. I think six is what 56-44. I could see it being closer than that.
Yeah. It could be. We'll see. This was fun though. And we'll see how it goes. Everyone give Joe a follow on Twitter at Joe Yurden. Check out Noted Hockey, his Substack. Make sure you subscribe to that. This was fun. By the way, again, we're taping this casual Wednesday. We'll be back next week, normal Friday. Hope everyone, of course, has a great Thanksgiving. And I know Joe's not a Bills fan, so he really don't care one way or the other. But I do care. I'm not going to lie, man. I hope the Bills win because I want the tone to be a lot better when we talk next week. But thanks as always, buddy. This was fun. Have a good Thanksgiving.
Yeah, have a great Thanksgiving. And happy Thanksgiving to everybody listening.